Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
I am Glenn the Geek from beautiful, sunny, palm tree-laden West Palm Beach, Florida.
That is not bad. And I am Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning for January 10th, 2011, episode 51, sponsored by Omega Alpha. Good morning, horse world.
Good morning, Jamie. Good morning, Jennifer. And I am hoping that I'll be back tomorrow. But today, I'm actually still in sunny Florida. I went outside this morning with my jacket on, all prepared for the chilly, and I had to take my jacket off. It's warm here this morning.
Really? What's the temperature there now?
It's like 69. It's going to be like 80 today. It's beautiful out.
Oh.
I'm not used to
this. That is why all those people pack up their horses and drive south for the winter. I mean, that is amazing. It's absolutely gorgeous down there. I thought it was gorgeous here. It got up to like 65 yesterday, so it was, you know, perfect riding weather. But it gets kind of chilly at night, and so waking up to 69, that's got to be pretty nice.
Well, I got to say, I felt a tiny bit guilty yesterday when I called Jennifer in the morning and it was 4 degrees there. So I felt a tiny bit guilty.
Oh, well, who knows if you're even going to get back, Glenn. I mean, the entire Southeast is blanketed in snow right now, except for Florida. I mean, my family is freaking out because Atlanta, you know, that's where I'm from and that's where my family's from, and they are just getting crushed right now in snow. And, you know, I can't imagine the airports running on time. So you might have to stay down there in sunny Florida for the next couple of days.
I know. It would be tough. I mean, I would have to suffer. But I do miss my wife. I have to say that, and it's not just because she's on the show. And also, I don't, thank God, I have a direct flight from Florida to Lexington and not through Atlanta, because Atlanta has, like, thousands of flights canceled. So,
oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, so I'm very glad about that. But we had a great time down here. Went to Fort Lauderdale yesterday, and there were a ton of people on the beach. That was kind of fun. I'd never been to Fort Lauderdale before, and then Saturday, of course, I came down for the Helmets for Riders Symposium on helmet safety, and we'll talk more about that. But first, let's go to Jennifer up there in frigid Lexington and find out what's happening on today's show.
In case anyone's interested, it is cold here. I broke down, and I've put a heater under my desk.
Good call.
Your feet are warm anyway.
Well, my feet are warm. The houses they build here in these little subdivisions just aren't made for, you know, they're just not really well insulated. So I've got my heater. I'm toasty warm. I'm ready to rock and roll. And on today's show, we have Alyssa Dauberman, owner of Craving Blue, a multiple champion, what they refer to as flat shod Tennessee walking horse. That means he goes just the way Mother Nature intended him to. But she's done all kinds of really cool stuff with Craving Blue, practices a lot of natural horsemanship techniques, and she got to go to the World Equestrian Games and ride Craving Blue along with, I think, one or two other Tennessee walking horse folks and demonstrate the breed for the world, and did a fantastic job. And we'll have her on today to chit-chat about her adventures with Craving, or no, Blue. He has his very own blog, Blue's Blog. And then also Mary Simons, who lots of our listeners will know as Monet Mary, is going to be calling in to talk to us a little bit later on this morning to talk about the latest group of original thoroughbred art that's going to be going up on eBay this week. And all you racing fans, you know who our favorite Eclipse-nominated horse is. There's some news about Monets and our very favorite mare.
Well, there we go. Hey, Jamie, how was your weekend? What happened new for you this weekend?
We had Chad's birthday on Saturday, so my husband's birthday, you know, first one married to me. So celebrated by, I made him a really nice dinner on let's see, Friday night, and then we actually, oddly enough, there is actually a hockey team here in Phoenix, Arizona. It is the most bizarre thing.
Yes, it's a position, isn't it?
Exactly. Isn't it weird? Like, we have a hockey team here, the Phoenix Coyotes. So we went to go see the Coyotes game on Saturday night and ended up going out to dinner and had just, you know, kind of like a couple date night. And then I rode, you know, I rode horses the entire rest of the weekend. He said to me yesterday after I got done, he goes, "You must be exhausted. You have sat on a horse all weekend." And I was like, "No, that's not what makes me exhausted. It's the dealing with all the other people involved when you're riding horses. But when I was just by myself, it was fine." And the funniest thing happened, my big, tough, warm blood, as we know from the bomb-proof clinics that I tried to get him to go to, my horse is afraid of bicycles. Terribly afraid of bicycles. And the weirdest thing happened on yesterday. I was out in the desert, and Chad was bike riding in the desert, and we actually kind of ran into each other. And, of course, my horse spooks at the bicycle, and then Chad, so he's like, "Okay, I'm going to go ahead and go." And so he turns around and pedals away. My horse chased the bicycle, chased Chad on his mountain bike, and I couldn't stop him. It was the way, I could not stop him. And so then I'm like, "Hey, stop!" I'm like, "Stop!" And so Chad stops. My horse slams on the brakes and spooks. And then Chad goes again. It became this, like, weird game of chase the bike, spook at the bike. Chase the bike, spook at the bike. Have you ever heard of such a thing, ever?
I think we're going to have to get Anna 20 on the phone to analyze that one.
This is very odd, yes.
I know, it was so weird. And I also had another strange horse thing happen to me, something that I've never seen before that we'll have to talk about at the end of the show. Jennifer, I've got to get your opinion on the bizarre nature of my horses. And does anybody else out there have such strange things happen to them and their equine partners? 347-637-3238 if you ever want to call and be a part of the show.
Well, and I will be with the show for about a half an hour today, and then I have to head off to the airport. I have a 3-hour drive to get to the airport today and then hopefully back to Lexington. So I want to remind everybody that you can participate in conversations that go on also on Facebook. You can find us over there. Just search for Horses in the Morning and join our page. We're getting close to 1,100, and we appreciate everybody. I know we have some new listeners out there as well. And for the new listeners, you can also listen on your phone. You just type in on your browser on your phone. You'll type in horsesinthemorning.mobi, M-O-B-I. And you can listen. That's what I'll be doing when I'm heading to the airport today. I'll be listening to the two of you finish up the show on my phone. So that's kind of cool. You can do that
as
well.
You're going to listen to us?
Yes,
yeah,
I gotta hear how you do without me, because Jamie said...
I thought you were going to turn your phone off.
She issued a challenge. So on Friday, she said, "We can do the show as good without you." So we'll see how that works.
I think I was more singing Girls' Day, whoop, whoop, Girls' Day, get rid of the boys. But, yeah, I think that was more of what I did. But I have to ask, Glenn, the listeners are dying to know, when you went to Fort Lauderdale and you were dressed in your shorts and sandals and black socks with your metal detector, did you find anything in the sand?
I didn't find a darn thing, but there were bikinis on the beach. I did discover that. So my day was complete. My day was absolutely complete.
Oh, my gosh, you're in trouble already. I mean...
All right. Well, the reason I really did come down to Florida was Saturday... was something put on by Riders for Helmets. It was a Riders for Helmets Safety Symposium. It was the first time that all different aspects of the horse world have gotten together to talk about helmet safety, believe it or not. So there were manufacturers of helmets. There were representatives from the different disciplines. There were professional riders. There were just insurance people, just a cross-section of the whole equestrian community. And in addition to that, they had a couple of doctors, neurosurgeons in, one from Tennessee, who was absolutely the most fascinating person to listen to. And I think, and I know Jennifer would have, that you would have found this day very, very interesting. he spoke, the doctor did, neurosurgeon, about, and he works with a lot of sports teams, about head injuries and head injuries specific to horse people. And there are a lot of head injuries every year with horse people. We account for about 20% of the head injuries in sports, believe it or not. Now, of course, football
wow.
is much bigger. Football is up there as well. But he did speak about head injuries, and he went into detail about what exactly happens when you get a head injury and how helmets do help and how they do protect. They talked a lot about, I didn't know that there were two really types of head injuries. One is a direct hit injury where that's the one where your helmet cracks and it was a direct hit by something or a direct hit
mm-hmm.
onto the ground. And then there's a rotational injury where your head goes forward or comes back or, you know, gets jerked around, and basically your brain sloshes around in there and bangs around like a ping pong ball. The helmets really protect against the first type of injury and not so much against the second, but they're working on ways to help that as well. So it was very interesting and a great conversation. And an unfortunate thing happened is that the Riders for Helmets campaign was started by Lindsey White, and it was started after Courtney King Dye's fall last year, or not fall, but when she got hurt last year and had the head injury. That's when
mm-hmm.
this all started, and when really helmets got to the forefront and people are talking more about helmets, and at all the association meetings this year, there's new helmet rules proposed, and at the USCF next week, the United States Equestrian Federation meeting, there is a new helmet rule that everybody's going to vote on. So it was timely that this meeting, that the safety symposium happened this weekend. But a couple things that came out of it that I wanted to talk to everybody about today, and I'm sorry to be so serious on a Monday, but I'm only here for half an hour. So, I just found it very fascinating. The unfortunate thing that happened is Courtney King Dye is up and around now. She's not riding, and she still has a massive struggle ahead of her. Her speech still isn't great, and, you know, she gets around, and she's down in Wellington now, and she's not teaching yet, but she's there to be around the dressage riders. She was supposed to be there and speak first thing in the day on Saturday. She went out to dinner with Lindsay and a bunch of people on Friday night and had a seizure after it had to go to the hospital.
Oh, my gosh.
So she was not able to make it on Saturday. I texted her last night, Sunday night, and she was still in the hospital. So, and it was interesting. I had texted her, and I said, well, if there's anything we can do for you, because she really wanted to do an interview with us so that she could get the word out. And I said, well, if there's anything we can do to help you, let me know. And she texted back, do you have an extra brain lying around? Which I thought was very poignant. You know, she's having troubles, and you know, she'll be the first one to say, I wasn't wearing a helmet that day, and I should have been. And she's a professional rider. You know, so there was a whole day of that. We had Kemi there, Kemi O'Donnell, whose daughter died at the age of 12. She spoke and had everybody crying in the room. Whose daughter had fallen off wearing one of the unapproved helmets, and it didn't work. So, you know, it was an interesting day, but there were a couple things, and I want to play some clips here. There were a couple things that came out of it that I thought were very exciting. One was David O'Connor spoke at the beginning of the day, and I don't know, Jamie, if you've heard David O'Connor speak. I know Jennifer has. David O'Connor is the president of the United States Equestrian Federation and, of course, a legend in the eventing world. But he's also a very good speaker. And he's always engaging, and you always want to hear more of David when he speaks. And one of the things that came out of this is that basically the USEF is ready to get these laws passed. For the first time, they're coming out and speaking, and you'll hear this in the clip I'm going to play. It's about 5 minutes long, but it's worth it, and David's very interesting. But you'll hear him say in here, we're ready. We're ready to make this happen now. So I know that you require helmets at your barn. We've talked about that before, right, Jamie?
Absolutely. I wouldn't have somebody on a horse without a helmet here for $1 million.
Well, and you know what? You're not going to be allowed to shortly, too, because there were representatives from the insurance industry there, and basically they were saying the health insurance companies are going to start to say, if you ride without a helmet and you fall off and get hurt, we're not going to cover you.
Oh,
so
my gosh.
The insurance companies are really starting. They're adding now equestrian in with airline pilots and everything else as far as health insurance is concerned. So you're going to see some forced changes just by the insurance side of things. And, you know, so So things are going to change, and that's what David talks about here. So let's take a listen to David O'Connor and his clip, and then we'll be back.
So I am here in a little bit of a couple of different roles. I think from the first thing we really do have to thank is Dr. Farrell for putting this together. I think the drive that he's had, and we've had a long-term relationship since really 96 in the Olympic Games when I first met Dr. Farrell. We've actually always had conversations about things like this for the last 15 years here. And so very much congratulations, I think, to Dr. Farrell for putting this together. With the drive, I think, that Lindsay brings with her company. I've had a relationship with Lindsay for a long time, too. And between the two of you, very much congratulations for getting this ball rolling in a formal way. Because I think the conversations that have happened for years. I come from a sport that's actually dealt with this for quite a long time. I was chairman of the FBI Safety Committee. I was on the first safety panel back in 1990 that produced the Hardington Report. And we talked about helmets at that point. And our sport and my sport, from a personal point of view, from eventing, has actually dealt with this for a long time, and it's actually changed the rules. And we had the same conversation that in our sport that a lot of people are having now. Fashion and culture was a huge roadblock in show jumping. Not so much cross country because our world was already there, right? And our technology at that point came out of racing. And we used the racing technology. I think we actually then brought, because of our sport, we actually brought technology that racing is using now with anywhere from vests to increase in the quality of the helmets. And so this conversation we're already on the road. And we've been on the road. And we've been on this road for really 15 or 20 years of leading to this point that we are now. And so the decision really that I think has to come up, and I really do believe that from the Federation point of view, that we will support everything that we can do to make helmets of these type of qualities mandatory when you're sitting on a horse at a horse show. We will commit to that. So what we really need to do is that we're at a time in the road where the hard decision has to be made. And that hard decision has to take in things like standards, things like quality of, and say that fashion is not an argument and culture is not an argument. The helmet that Candace was talking about before really wasn't designed for safety for falling off horse. Never was. It was designed, history-wise, for fox hunting. And it was designed for fox hunting because if you ever hunted in Europe a lot, you jump through a lot of woods and trees and branches and thorns. And that thing was to save from branches and thorns. It wasn't to save from falling off. That wasn't the technology it was actually invented for. And so it became a fashion culture, part of all of our sport. We all ride, all rode in it forever. But that's not applicable to today's world. And if we think about all the sports, if we think about hockey, if we think about football and the changes that they're going through right now, we think about soccer and the changes that they're going through right now, skiing, bicycling, snowboarding, all of these sports, if we look at pictures from where they were 20 years ago and where they are now, are completely different in the way that they use their technology for safety. And we, as a sport, are still defending something that in the end is undefendable. It's undefendable. And so the time on that road is now, I think, to change. And the time on that road is now to say, this is the direction that we have to go to. If you have the technology, you have to use it. You have to. You have to use it if you have the technology available. Not always going to think the road continues. The road will continue after we change, I think, the process. But in the end, we have to use the technology if we're ever available. And so we come down to a point that, again, I believe we're at a fork in the road that we have to take the line of saying that we need to go down there and that fashion, again, is not an argument. That we have the technology to use. That technology will grow, that technology will get better, that thing will always go on, that will be an ever-increasing road. But the time is now. And I personally have kind of been here for a long time, but in my role as president, I haven't really pushed this. And now I think it's the time to push it and make it across the board. We've done it with juniors. We did it with juniors 15 years ago. That did not end their careers. We don't have less juniors now because of the funny helmets. We don't have less people bicycle riding because they have to wear helmets. We don't have less people. No, people will change to the situation that they go into. And I really do believe that, again, in this time, that we have to do this now. And we need to change the rules, and we need to change the process. Everybody is already, in some ways, there. It's about taking the time and saying, now, this is going to happen. It's going to happen. And so whether this is going to happen in 3 years, whether it's going to happen in 5 years, whether it's going to happen in 7 years, what's the difference? It's going to happen. So let's do it now. Next method. Thank you.
Glenn?
Well, there he is. I think the point that he made at the end there was perhaps the most revealing, and that is that, you know, it's going to happen. This is just a matter of time. And another thing that came out at the symposium was that if it isn't the Federation and the FEI and the USEF and all the associations that mandate this, the government will. They're going to step in at some point. The insurance companies will probably first, but the government will step in at some point. So I thought it was revealing that for the first time the USEF is coming out and saying, we're going to do something about this now. We're going to make this happen.
Let's keep the government out of it. Let's preempt the government and just take care of it. Because just like David said, it is undefendable to say I didn't wear a helmet. I mean, it's just, you cannot defend yourself. That when somebody falls off, what is the first thing? Oh, okay, back up. When somebody gets in a car accident, what's the first thing somebody asks? Were they wearing their seatbelt? Exactly. So if somebody falls off a horse, what's the first thing that they say?
Jamie, I want to read something to you that Aubrey Miller just posted on our Facebook page, and I think Aubrey listens when she's at work. She's a regular listener since she can't call in. She says, while you're talking about helmets, a friend of mine was bolted with badly on Saturday and ended up slamming her head into a tree. She broke C1 and C2 in her neck. That'd be your vertebrae. She broke her nose and smashed in a few teeth. The front of her Charles Owens skull cap was caved in. She is in the ICU now and looking at a long recovery. But without that helmet, that caved in thing would have been her head. Saved her life, absolutely no doubt about it.
Bless her heart.
And that's the kind of lateral direct, what they're talking about there is the kind of direct injury that the helmets do protect you from. It's that direct shot into a tree like she had. You know, in this case, her neck, and there was a lot of talk about how the neck relates to the head, and I didn't know a lot of how that worked. And there's a lot of testing going on now to see how they can better design helmets so that they protect against more types of injuries. There was one very interesting, Jamie, and I love this. There were a couple new technology people there, too, that are coming out with new technology. And the most, I wish I could show you the video of this because it's very effective. There was a guy there from Rhode Island who had a new type of pad, a foam pad. And what your helmets are filled with is basically foam. But this was a new type of foam pad, and it's also foam that fill the chest protectors that eventers wear. I'm sure you own one. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what he did is he took the pads out of those chest protectors, and he said, I want to show you what these pads do and then what this new foam does. And he had a big concrete block. And he had a bowling ball, a full 16-pound bowling ball. And to demonstrate the power of force and things when they hit your head, he dropped the bowling ball under the concrete block. And, of course, it makes this big bang, and it bounces about a foot or two in the air. And it was very, you know, it was very effective watching it do that. And then he took the pad out of one of the protective vests that they sell now, And he put it on the concrete block, and he dropped the bowling ball on it. And it made almost no difference. The bowling ball bounced about the same height that it had without the pad. And it went all the way through the concrete, and you heard the thump or the ball hitting the concrete. Then he took his pad, which kind of looks like a Spider-Man outfit, by the way. He took his pad, put it on the concrete block, dropped the bowling ball. It went thud and didn't bounce.
And
what? This new foam is designed that when it's hit with a blunt force, it hardens. It gets hard as a rock. So it just absorbs, it absorbed all that energy. And to prove the point, this is the highlight of my day being a geek, to prove the point, what he did is he took the pads out of the traditional vest, and he put one on top and one on the bottom of a bag of M&Ms. He put the bag of M&Ms in between them. And he dropped the bowling ball on it. And, of course, he had a bunch of smashed M&Ms. Then he took the M&M, another M&M bag and put it between two of his pads. Not even cracked. The M&Ms weren't even cracked when he dropped the bowling ball on them. So, I noticed that a bunch of the manufacturers there were chatting with him after. I think you're going to see those new types of things come into play, too. It was very interesting, and I think what might come out of this, one, is this particular group now, for the first time in history, has gotten together to say, we need to save more lives, and how can we do it, and they're going to be working together in the future to one, increase awareness, and two, one of the things that came out, and I think you'll agree with this, is that helmet wearing has to become cool. Once it becomes cool, people will do it, and there were a bunch of professional riders there from BZ Madden was there, and a bunch of others talking about helmet wearing and from the dressage, from jumping, all the way through. So it was very interesting. It was enlightening. I hope that something comes of it in the future here, and I think it will. I have a couple more recordings, fun stuff. I got some time with Allison Springer, the eventer, who you probably know, and we'll have some recordings later in the week of the different people that I got to say hi to and chat with, so we'll do that later in the week. But I know you have a guest coming up, and I have to cut out of here, so you have a great day on the show here, Jane, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Yeah, it's comforting knowing you'll be listening to the entire show on horsesinthemorning.mobi. That's lovely. So don't pick us apart too bad, boss. We'll do the best we can.
All right, you have fun. And Jennifer, I'll see you in a little while. Hopefully she picks me up at the airport if she's not too mad at me after leaving her during the show today. We hope, anyway.
Bikinis
I heard
on
that.
The beach.
Bye, guys. Have a great show.
All right, bye, Glenn. Well, before we get to our next guest, or our first guest, I guess Glenn was kind of a guest because he called in for just a little while. But anyway, we want to let you know our sponsor for this half hour is Omega Alpha. We all care about what we feed our horses and, honestly, probably more than what we feed ourselves. Omega Alpha also cares about what goes into your horses and ponies. And that's why Omega Alpha uses only natural formulations for enhancing equine health and performance. All of their products are made by them, using the finest natural ingredients available. The other difference with Omega Alpha is the science that goes into their products. Dr. Cheng, who makes them, is a very well-respected in the industry as a pioneer of putting in the right natural ingredients together to make formulations that work for you and your horse. They have a wide range of products to help you. See them all at omegaalpha.ca, omegaalpha.ca. You can check them out online. But our first guest is going to be coming up here, and it's tough to talk about this because we're going to talk to Alyssa Dauberman, owner of Craving Blue, and Craving Blue is a very natural Tennessee walking horse where maybe we all don't have the greatest experience with Tennessee walking horses and the way that they can be trained. Well, she is an example of the way that they should be trained. Alyssa, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm sorry to have kind of a scattered intro like that, but, you know, when when you hear about Tennessee Walking Horses and so many of the things that go on in the Tennessee Walking Horse world with government getting involved, we don't want to highlight any of that, and that's why we're having you on. Tell us a little bit about Craving Blue.
I've had him since he was a baby. I did all the training with him myself. You know, I've always used natural methods. He's always been barefoot or sometimes keg shod. I've never used any artificial training or any heavy shoes or anything like that. Basically, tried to set an example that, you know, you don't have to do those things to have a really great Tennessee Walking Horse.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm a huge fan and a proponent of that. And so you talk about, you know, him being a you didn't talk about it. I've been reading about you, and, you know, your horse is a super champion and a flat shod. So is this the same kind of shows that Tennessee Walking Horses do, or is this kind of like a separate division of shows? What makes the mega champion in the flat shod world?
He competes against other Tennessee Walking Horses with heavy shoes on. We don't compete against any horses that are stacked or padded. I feel that that's not where I want to spend my money on entry fees. I don't support that industry at all. But Blue basically has so much heart, and he tries so hard, and it's just such a natural at what he does that he is able to compete with heavy shod horses and still do really well.
Oh, my gosh, that's fantastic. Congratulations. So, I mean, you've had a pretty exciting year. Talk to us about the World Equestrian Games.
All right. I apologize. I am a little sick still, so I'm having
trouble.
Yeah, it's been like 2 months now that I've been sick. But the games were amazing. It was such a great experience. The National Walking Horse Association was actually the association that sent horses there. They sent 10. Blue was one of them. And we all got to pair up and do a routine together to music at the games. And we did that once a day, each day that we were there. So it was a lot of fun.
So how did you guys get to be the pair picked? Did they have like a contest? Or did you? How did you get to be the people who got to the WEG show?
They did a selection process, so we had to apply. We had to send in DVDs and information on the horse and everything as far as, you know, what he's won in the past, significant things that he's done as far as being involved in expos and clinics and things like that. And they narrowed it down through looking at that information as to which horses would be the best representatives.
Do you know how many people applied? Or how many?
I don't know. I'm not
I bet you
sure.
There were a lot.
Yeah. So, well, it was very time consuming. You know, we're from all over the country, so we had to get our team together. I believe 3 times we got together to practice, so it involved a lot of travel through the year, and it was a big commitment. So I think a lot of people would have had a little bit of difficulty trying to do that. You know, a lot of us do have full-time jobs and things like that, so I was lucky enough to have the flexibility to be able to still leave and do it.
So you sucked up all your vacation for 2010, didn't you?
Yeah, pretty much.
So you were the people who came to WEG and the horses that came to WEG were selected individually, and then you were kind of on your own to get together and develop a presentation for the public.
We were actually helped with that by the people who organized this for us. They chose who we got paired up with, and they chose our music, and they helped us do our routines and things like that. So they pretty much laid it out for us at all these practices that we went to. And then each time we got together, we were able to go through it. And, you know, once we had time to study it at home, we would have our patterns down and everything, get the timing right, and you know, shape it up in the last few seconds. We had our final practice the day before we went into the game, so.
Yikes! So once WEG came around.
Yeah, we had
and
actually only run our routine at three different practices until we got there, so.
Wow. Were you nervous? when you got there?
No. Everything was very well run. You know, the whole process, I was really surprised. There was no chaos. There was no drama. Everything was just so well organized and went so smoothly that you really didn't even get nervous or worked up at all. It was wonderful.
So you mentioned that you had to send in Blue's resume, so to speak. And I think Blue's done more than what, because most of us associate Tennessee Walking Horses, regardless of whether or not they're weighted horses or non-weighted horses, with a classic saddle seat style of class at a horse show. Blue's done some other stuff besides that. He's like the versatility dude, isn't he? You've done lots of other things with him.
Yeah, we don't do a lot of competition versatility-wise. There's not a whole lot of that around for gated horses. When we travel to some of the bigger shows, we do have that option. But I've been doing dressage with him. I actually started that with his final show last year, and he did win his very first test.
Mm-hmm.
We have done jumping, haven't competed in that, but we do that from time to time just for fun, so he does know how to do it. We do English and Western. We're big in AXA now. We do the competitive trail challenges, so he likes have a little variety.
All right, I got to ask you a question about the dressage thing, because I actually have a friend of mine, Tennessee Walking Horse, that I ride dressage as well. But the difference with this walking horse is he actually has a more natural trot than he does gait. So do you, when you talk, you say you do dressage, is that in a gated manner or is that at the trot?
It's at a gated dressage class type of setting.
Okay.
I don't compete against horses that trot or other breeds. When we have the walking horse classes, it's strictly for them. It's not for mixed breeds.
I gotcha. And just so I can tell everybody a little bit about your resume, Alyssa here has won. I'm reading an article about you right now. It's in front of me from the humanesociety.org. Now, first of all, I think the Humane Society is amazing, and I think it's a great company to keep, that they write an article about you and your horse and how great what you guys are doing and how it sets you guys apart from the walking horse world. You have won 28 national equestrian championships, and you've represented the world at the World Equestrian Games. You have pretty much set the bar for more humane treatment of horses in general, and Tennessee Walking Horses in particular is what they talk about here. Tell us about that article and how that came about and how cool it is, or how it feels to you to be a part of the Humane Society.
Well, that actually came about because I'm involved with the Humane Society and their Anti-Soaring Alliance, which is their alliance to basically stop soaring. Obviously you guys know that I believe in doing things naturally, and I don't support any artificial or any pads on horses or any of that stuff. So this organization basically is trying to take a stand and you know, the Anti-Soaring Alliance is trying to put a stop to it. So that's how they decided to do this article. They knew about me through being involved in that.
I gotcha. And now, how do you feel? Do you feel like you're making a difference so far? Or do you have a long way to go?
Both. I mean, I think that we've made a lot of progress. I do get people who are very supportive of what I've done, and you tell me that it's a great thing to have somebody out there who is representing that does things the way that I do, but there's always going to be a long way to go until it's completely over. So,
it's a cultural thing that's been there for a long time. It's not going to disappear overnight, but ignoring it won't make it disappear either. So you're on the right track.
Good for you, girl.
Yeah. Now, when you go to Tennessee Walking Horse shows, because I don't get to attend them. When you go there, they have, at the same show, they have different classes and divisions for horses that are shod in different ways. Have you seen, over the years since you started with Craving Blue, a increase in participation for the more naturally shod divisions? Because I know for like when you go to a quarter horse show, the English divisions are always smaller. It's offered, it's available, there's lots of enthusiastic people, but it's not as popular. Do you see that difference between participation starting to shift at all yet as far as the competitors are concerned? You're seeing more horses in the natural shod classes than you used to?
I think so. The division I compete in has always been the largest and most competitive. And
really?
I think that has to do with the fact that people can take their regular backyard horses and come to a horse show with them. They don't have to have special shoeing or anything like that that they have to maintain. So, you know, it's more accessible to the regular person who's not a trainer. They did start several years ago with another class that's basically even less of a step up from what I do. It's, you know, very slow, easygoing type of class, and it was mostly because we had so many horses trying to fit into the division that I show in that they kind of established another one for even more easygoing horses.
I'm guessing that your Tennessee Walking Horse is associated with a very forward ground covering gait, thus going down the rows of crops. So they've created an additional division for horses who are of a more pleasure riding type, in that getting to the end of the row crop in a hurry is not necessarily their goal.
Exactly.
That's my kind of Tennessee Walker. That's the one I want.
Yeah, it seems to be more for the horses that are more like a typical horse rather than your more showy or naturally forward moving. I'm trying to describe it in a way that doesn't make it seem like they're not as good, because that's not at all what it is. It's just...
It's a different type, sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Well, Alyssa,
go ahead, Jamie.
I think what you're doing, Alyssa, is fantastic, and I think that getting the word out there that this kind of riding and this kind of training it can become the norm, and it can become the most successful way. And I really love what you're doing and taking a role in working on the Tennessee Walking Horse breed and changing the reputation and the perception. And I applaud you. Fantastic job. And listen, where can people get a hold of you or find out more about you? Do you have a website, Facebook page, any of that?
Blue has his own fan page on Facebook. It's facebook.com/cravingblue. And he also has a blog at cravingblue.wordpress.com. And all his information and my information are on both those sites. So.
Oh, that's fantastic. And he must be really busy with all the writing that he's doing for Facebook and for the blog.
It's very difficult. It's very difficult to type without thumbs, he will tell you.
I love it. Well, listen, Alyssa, thank you so much for being a part of Horses in the Morning. It's been great talking to you and just learning more about it. And we'd like to keep in touch with you and kind of find out, to kind of follow you guys a little bit, if that's okay.
Yeah, I'd love to.
All right, fantastic. Well, you have a great week starting out the Monday morning. And take care.
All right, thanks all so right. much for having me.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Jennifer, I think that's so cool what she's doing and trying to kind of change the perception of the Tennessee Walking Horse and doing it in such a natural, exciting way.
I was amazed.
Round of applause.
I never realized that the flat shod and more natural divisions were so popular, because, unfortunately, I need to take the time to educate myself. The headlines for the breed are generally negative ones. So
yeah.
I, as an outsider who has not educated myself, have the perception that that's the majority.
Right.
When it appears that it's not.
Yeah. That's because it's kind of like listening to the news, you know, on your local news. They don't ever say, so-and-so, you rescued, Firefighter Bill rescued little Miss Kitty out of a tree. I mean, that's not what
they
talk about. They're talking about the worst things.
You're
so that's obviously going to be what it is. But, I mean, we've all had experience with that, or at least I have. And, you know, not to get in too deep, because I know Glenn's going to get mad if we talk about it too terribly much, but, the Tennessee Walking Horse breed as a whole doesn't have a great reputation, and I think it's people like Alyssa that are going to jump in and kind of try to make a difference. I mean, I think it's so cool that just the whole Tennessee Walking Horse, you know, breed is has dressage shows now. That's available to Tennessee Walking Horse riders. I think it's fantastic. I remember when I rode in Lexington that a woman had a Tennessee Walking Horse that she did the show jumpers with. I know, like, the jumpers. Like,
really?
Not Tennessee Walking Horse show jumpers. Yeah, I mean, granted, it was, she did really well. It wasn't the prettiest thing you've ever seen. But by God, that horse went up to a jump and got to the other side of it without knocking it over, and that's all that really matters.
Isn't that interesting? Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's a classic example of don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. For those of us who are quite willing to toss away the breed as a whole, well, maybe not so much. There's a lot of folks out there who care deeply for it and want to advance it. So if you have somebody in your community who supports humane and appropriate treatment of their Tennessee Walking Horse, go out and give them a pat in the back.
Yeah, and send us an email about them because we'd love to talk to them. And like I said, this woman, Diana, the Tennessee Walking Horse that I ride that prefers to trot, actually was, she found at one of those Tennessee Walking Horse barns. And, you know, she saw him as a two-year-old and thought that horse, you know, they said, oh, you don't want that one. He'll never make a good horse, ever. And here she is, and she's, you know, my students ride him in dressage shows and do very well with him. So, you know, she at least he was kind of the toss-up, like, you don't want that one. And, of course, as a woman, we're emotional creatures, and we're like, well, I do want that one, and I'll show you what he
Well, we're women. As soon as you say we can't have it.
Oh, we want it.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah, it's like somebody came up to me and said, you're a bad human because I can't do math. No, I'm just never going to be a mathematician.
You know what? I would just,
you know,
not do math.
Yeah, that's what God created the calculator for.
Exactly. Well, you know, enough about that before Glenn called in. I read something really cool I wanted to tell you about before we get our next guest on, Jennifer. This is fun for those of you that live in Lexington. The Central Kentucky Farms, a lot of them have open houses this month to permit what they say inspections of their stallions by those in Lexington for the Keeneland Horses of All Ages sale that starts January 10th. So basically, you can say that I'm going to potentially buy a horse at this Keeneland sale, and you can go to these farms and take a tour, basically, of each farm. And some of the farms that are up for open houses, now you can find most of the information on bloodhorse.com. It kind of goes over a list of what's open.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm talking farms like Danesway. It's going to have an open house and stallion show on January 21st, on January 8th through the 13th. They're serving food and drinks. Danesway, Darby Dan, Spendthrift Farm, of course, where AP Indy and Zenyatta live, Lane's End Farm is going to be having open house daily from 10 to 2, from January 8th through the 14th at the Stallion Complex. I don't think that you're going to be able to go find Charles and Zenyatta on that tour. Maybe you will. Who knows? But it's a pretty big place. So Lane's End, open for tours. Well, I didn't say tours. Open for stallion showcasing.
Yeah,
Winery,
pretty cool.
Ashford, Crestwood. I think this is so cool. I would totally, if I lived in Lexington, Jennifer, here's what I would do.
I know where I'm going for lunch every day.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Well, you got to dress the part. So I'd have to slap on some high heels and, you know, a business suit.
Oh,
smart business suit. Yeah, exactly. Got to look the part. And I would put on some celebrity shades, like some of the big sunglasses. And I would hire somebody to walk. Yeah, I would hire somebody to walk about three steps behind me with a, you know, a notepad.
With
or
a
laptop.
Notepad. There we go. Yeah. Oh, and Crestwood Farm, the one here at the bottom of Crestwood, is like a mile away from here. I could, if it wasn't sub-zero out, I could walk there. That's pretty cool. Yeah.
It would be so fun. So, of course, I'm not encouraging people to sneak onto farms and look at stallions, but I totally would do it if I was there.
Hey, open house time.
James, write this down, please, and then have somebody like typing into a laptop or writing notes behind you. How fun would that be? But see, the problem is that I could really, you know, I only have one suit that I've used for job interviews. So if I was at Gainsway and then I went over to Darley and then 2 days later went to Lane's End and the next day went to Vinery and the next day went to Ashford, I'd be wearing the same clothes at every single farm. And I think eventually somebody would catch on.
No. <That's it. laughs>
I didn't change clothes.
Oh, that's a hoot. That would be really fun. Just go out. And for folks who are in the area and or within a comfortable travel distance from Lexington, the January Horses of All Ages sale is actually the most affordable sale to attend because you don't have to be a high roller to bid on horses. There are
really?
A lot of horses sold for very reasonable sums at this particular sale. So if you can stand the temperatures and it's the kind of thing you love to do, come on down and check it out, you know?
I couldn't go. I would come home. I would come home with 12 horses and a major credit card debt.
I wonder if Keeneland takes PayPal.
Yeah. Do they have some nice performance horse looking geldings at those sales? Because
they do. They have what they call horse racing prospects, because they can sell the horse. They have to give them a category. So they have horses of racing age, and you do get some really nice prospects. Now, you're not going to find the ones at this particular sale aren't going to be the ones that are dragging their butts around the claimers. These are horses that are still
right.
athletic and have a lot of career ahead of them. So they're not going to be dirt cheap, but they're also going to be at a much higher level of soundness and have a whole lot more in front of them. So it's kind of an interesting thing to do. I used to do it all the time back when we lived in Pennsylvania. We'd go to the mixed sales. And it was a really fun place to pick up horses at a very reasonable sum that had all kinds of really great futures for them. And it's fun to look at the bloodlines and go, oh, look, four generations back, this horse is from Native Dancer, and it's fun.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be a blast. I would totally go, and it would be a problem. So I would be caught stalking all the farms, and then I'd be the guy bidding on the geldings over at the hotel.
I don't think you're not going to be the only one bidding on geldings, though. I think they're gonna have a good following this year because more people are going to be looking for prospects because the prices are down.
Yeah, that'd be good. Well, hey, we're going to play our daily song here in a second, Jennifer, before we get Mary Simons on. And, of course, you know, kind of in the same vein with our thoroughbred talk that we just had, we're going to talk to Monet, Mary, in just a second. But I want to talk to you about Pocket Stable real quick. This is the easiest thing that I have ever done for my horses is download an app. It is so easy. Pocket Stable is the only app that's been created for horse owners who want to keep all of their information together. Vaccines, worming, farrier, dentist visits, all of that is in your phone in this, like, cute little Pocket Stable world. It's easily accessible. You can track weight. You can get reminders of important events. All you have to do is go to pocketstable.com, or if you have an iPhone, just search for that in your app store. And it's money well spent, because now I can tell you the last time the farrier came, or, you know, my horse got his teeth done, or the last time he got vaccinated and what he's due for next time. So PocketStable.com. And now Marianne Kennedy and Horsing Around here on.
We work all week so that we can eat and own a little piece of God's ground. Pushing papers and pens, red tape never ends. The stress can turn a smile into a frown. I need some horsing around. Going to the barn, my trouble drift away. My best friend and I settle up and get away. This is what makes a horse lover's heart bound. you love him like I do. This is what makes a horse lover's heart pound.
That's Marianne Kennedy, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning, and it's actually Glenn's not here. You know, usually Glenn's the one who talks after the song. Glenn the Geek, I'm Jamie Jennings. We got Jennifer H. producing, and no Glenn. This whole entire episode is brought to you by Omega Alpha. So thanks to Omega Alpha for their sponsorship participation. But I do want to mention that we're waiting on Monet Mary to call in, and, you know, something happened to me this weekend, Jennifer, that I have never in my entire life had happened before. 30-something years of owning horses, and never have I ever seen this before.
I know what it is. Let me guess.
I know what it is. Go.
That means he didn't roll after you gave him a bath.
No. No,
oh,
that
okay.
happened. That was definitely a part of it. I have this thoroughbred named Jet. He's the one that if you look on Facebook, he's the one that we basically, you know, got from the sheriff's department, and they rescued him from death's door. This horse has had, up until, you know, the past year, he's probably had the worst life ever. I mean, he was a racehorse, but then was sold to some guys that ran him in the desert, and he was a match racehorse in the desert, okay? And then after he did that, I guess while he was doing that, somebody tied him to their swing set in the backyard where they left him for about 3 months. And I don't know how he survived. He got down to 720 pounds, okay? And he's like 1,100 pounds now.
Wow.
So, you know, long story short, the sheriff's department rescued him, or the guy's still in jail. You know, this horse has had some major emotional drama happen. And, you know, he's taken a long time for me to kind of figure out, because he was aggressive and he's extremely food aggressive, which I kind of turned into food motivation. But he was aggressive to the other horses. He was aggressive to me. He was angry. He couldn't touch his ears. He couldn't touch his mouth. He couldn't touch his face. So anyway, he's doing so much better, to the point where this weekend, you know, I've ridden him enough in the arena, I wanted to take him on his first trail ride.
Okay.
And so, yeah, so taking him on his first trail ride, something happened after the trail ride that I have never seen happen before, and we're going to have to talk to, we're going to have to actually hold on that, because we have a phone call coming in, Jen.
The audience is in suspense.
I know. They're going to have to wait. See, it's like American Idol, and we'll tell you after the break who's been voted off.
Hey, let me grab hold of Mary here.
I got
her
on right now, Mary.
Hi,
good morning. How are you?
Great. It's great.
Oh,
I'm
see,
great.
You want to know now, don't you, what happened after the trail ride?
And I hear those stories
okay.
every day about these horses. You know, I work at the Equine Humane Center here, and we get all these horses coming in every day, the same thing. And it's just, so good to hear a good ending.
Yeah, and I'm sure that you guys have some pretty happy success stories as well. I think just the other on Friday we were looking through y'all's website, finding choosing horses. So I found the one I want.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So this horse, his name is Jet. I go, Mary, and I hop on him and I take him for his first ride in the desert. And we didn't get very far because, you know, I didn't want to push it. So we probably went about a half mile into the desert, turned around and came a half mile back. This is after I lunged him and walked, track cantered around the arena at my house. And my front yard opens up to like 10,000 acres of desert. So that's where we did a little half mile out and a little half mile back. And he was really good. I could tell he was very tense, but he didn't freak out. He didn't spook. He didn't buck. He didn't bolt. He didn't do anything dumb. So I bring him back. I untack him in the cross ties, and I put him in his stall. And I literally don't get five steps, and the horse lays down flat out and goes to sleep. 5 seconds after I put him in his stall, he lays down, I mean, not sternal, like flat out, and goes to sleep for at least 25 minutes, lays there.
Wow.
he
had an epiphany.
Nap time?
Why would he do that? Why would they pick, like, was he so stressed and, like, adrenaline pumped by going back into the desert that, you know, the release of adrenaline wore off and he just knocked out? I mean, he wasn't colicking. He wasn't sick. I mean, I got him up after a while and took his temperature and listened to my gut sounds because I was like, my student, 10 years old, she looks at him and she looks at him laying down and she goes, well, you killed him.
That's awesome.
He knows the answer.
I have never seen anything like that happen before, and I just was curious if you guys had ever seen that before, a horse 5 seconds after going to the stall just laying down and going to sleep. Anybody ever?
Not me.
Unless it's his normal nap time. If that's his normal nap time, maybe that was just his circadian rhythm.
Middle of the day.
Time to go. Okay.
Yeah. Wow, that's wild. Well, take him on another trail ride in the desert and see if that happens again.
I know. We will. We will.
That's pretty wild.
Let's go to why Mary is calling in besides listening to my strange thoroughbred stories. We have talked
to you. No, I'm fascinated.
Yeah. And, you know, you've got the name Monet Mary for a reason. Tell us, you know, kind of take everybody, in case there was some people that didn't get to hear you last time, tell everybody a little bit about what you do, and then we'll get into this new group of Monets.
Well, we go out and get famous thoroughbred horses to paint abstract paintings, and then we take the paintings and we auction them either on eBay or at a fundraiser to raise funds for various equine organizations. And we just had the holiday auction that ended in December. We did very well. Smarty Jones was the top earner. He brought in over $3,000 for his painting.
Oh, wow. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. That's fantastic. He and Curlin and Big Brown were right up there in the top. And Einstein too. And now this auction that we're going to have is a special auction in honor of the Eclipse Awards, which if you're in the thoroughbred industry, know that that's a special award they give one horse in each category every year, and it's coming up next Monday. So we got artists who have won Eclipse Awards. Most of them are Horse of the Year, which is very prestigious. And then we have the three ladies. We have Zenyatta, and hopefully she'll get the Horse of the Year. And Silver Bullet Day and Indian Blessing are the two other ladies. So this auction is just in special for the Eclipse Awards.
Okay, so right now we are counting down to the Eclipse Awards and Horse of the Year, which happens on the 17th. Now, does this auction end the moment they announce Zenyatta is Horse of the Year, or is it going to end like afterwards so people can get their bets, place their bets for the put in their bids, I guess? Or does
it end
before
everybody goes to the ceremony? It should. It begins on Wednesday the 13th, and it will end on Monday afternoon. Since that's all out on the West Coast, I'm not sure what the time period will be, but it should be around between 3 and 5 in the afternoon, and that's when it should end. When you go to put in an initial bid, it'll tell you how many hours are left in the bidding. And then that way you'll know, because they're all staggered. Each artist is staggered by a few minutes, so each one will end at a different time.
Ah.
Okay. So I got to ask you a personal question here. You spent some time with Zenyatta having her paint. Is that correct?
The last time I painted with her was 2 years ago. This one that was just recently done was done by one of my helpers in California. Her name's Julie Sarno, and she and Leslie Carter went out to the barn of John Sheriff's and did the recent paintings.
Okay, so probably didn't talk to Zenyatta about who the baby daddy was going to be. Is that what I'm getting
I don't her? Think she knew at the time. That was in November.
Well, obviously she was still in California. Okay.
Yes, she was still in California at the time she painted. But, yes, yeah, she's the queen, and I'm sure whoever is the baby daddy will be perfect for her. So I know who I would like to see, but.
Who's your pick?
My pick is AP Indy.
Yes,
because every time
too.
He's painted him, you too? Yeah,
me too.
Every time
without
you think of Monet, he has the most charming personality. He is just he's just cooperative and kind and easygoing, and I think he would just be perfect for her.
It's so funny. As women, we completely personify the horses instead of like, oh, his racing record said this and his numbers were this. We're like, oh my God, he's so nice and he's funny.
He is so nice.
And they totally should be together.
Oh, well, I hate to bring up another organization, but Old Friends is one of my other favorite charities, and they have a Facebook page for their little pony. His name is Little Silver Charm. And if you want a good chuckle, you have to go to his Facebook, because he wants to meet Zenyatta so badly, and there's a picture of him standing in front of Lane's Aunt with a box of chocolates and a Guinness beer.
Oh,
and
oh
his
my
sign says, waiting for Zenyatta, and he wants
to
date with her.
I have to go there.
Oh, my God. Yeah, what's his name, and how can we find him again? Oh, that is too funny.
Yeah, you can either go to Old Friends and go from there, or Little Silver Charm's Facebook page. He's a pony. Mm-hmm. He's just a little, little horse, and he wants to meet Zenyatta.
All right, Little Silver Charm.
Oh, that is
too
funny.
He has painted Monets also. He was an artist. He's a past artist, too. So, but, yeah, this auction will have the 13th through the 17th will be Eclipse Award winners, mostly the Horse of the Years. We've got AP Indy, our favorite, and Black Tie Fair, who just passed away. He'll be in there. Cigar, Curlin, Mineshaft, Point Given, and Tisnow, who've all been Horse of the Year. And every one of the paintings, I think, is very, very attractive, and hopefully everybody will enjoy those.
Now,
and then
of
the
course,
ladies I mentioned.
Yeah, well, we're talking about the paintings. So tell everybody, you say, oh, yeah, the horse painted it. No, really, honestly, the horse painted it and then signs it. And tell everybody kind of how that happens.
Well, I give them a paper plate with some children's non-toxic paint on it. And horses are very nosy, so they will look to see what's on this plate, and they stick their face in it, and then they get the paint on their muzzle area, chin or nose, and they kind of want to wipe it off. So I give them a piece of paper, watercolor paper, and let them wipe it off on the paper. And then I give them the paper plate again, and they fall for it again. And then I start to give them treats. And when they get the treats, they think, okay, if I do this, I'm going to get a treat. So they will repeat the process over and over, and then we fill up the paper. Or if they're full and they don't want any more treats, then we end the process and look at the picture and give them an autograph with the hoof print, and away we go.
I don't think you're giving them enough credit, actually, because I don't think that they're just being nosy and then trying to wipe it off. I really feel in my heart that the horses, they know what they're doing. They know that all the money from the proceeds of these auctions are going to go help their friends and their family. So I really do think that they are painting. They are artistic animals. They're creatures of compassion. Yeah, whatever. I don't know. I know. They're just wiping it off. But I like
to agree. I agree, because sometimes if they're a little hesitant, we say, now this is to help those horses that didn't make it to the breeding, fame that you have, or that did not win the races that you have, and now they're, in crisis. So this is to help them. And then they kind of understand, and they'll say, okay, I'll do it.
Yeah, I thought that's what happened. I totally thought that's what happened. Okay, so where can people find these paintings, these Monets? Because I know that when you did the note cards, that was a huge, huge success here. I mean, people emailed and asked questions and all that, and you did these Monet note cards that had Zenyatta in it. So tell everybody where they can find the Monets and the paintings and get involved and maybe finding out more about your facility.
Well, they can go to rerun.org if they'd like to learn more about Rerun or the paintings, and just look under the heading of Monet, M-O-N-E-I-G-H. Or they can see the actual paintings for this auction on eBay. Go to ebay.com and then type in the search word Monet. And we will be making the Zenyatta painting available in a poster and note cards. They'll be available next week. They're on the truck right now on the way to our office in New Jersey. So everybody emailed me and said, I can't afford, a $2,000 Zenyatta painting, what can I have? So now we will make this poster available too, that they can have. That'll be, I think it'll be under $40, but it's a 14 by 11, and you can just put it right in a standard frame, and it's affordable. And then we'll also have her painting on note cards that will be available.
I love those note cards.
So,
they're
beautiful.
They're blank inside, so they're good for everything.
They're good for everything, and you can write your own saying inside if you want to use it for whatever occasion, and you have a picture of hers to frame if you want to put it in a 4x6 frame afterwards. So,
yeah. Cool.
And then we'll be having, you were talking about the Stallion shows going on in Lexington, and we frequent those because we're always scouting our new artists. And so we went yesterday and went to four different farms and had a fabulous time, even in the cold weather. But there is a Stallion show in New York, so those people who live on the East Coast, there will be a Stallion show on January 28th, which is a Friday, at the Vinery Empire, the old Empire Stud, now called Vinery Farm, up there in outside of Saratoga. So there will be a Monet exhibit there also.
Cool.
And they will be showing their Stallions art, and along with a cigar and a midnight lute and a rags to riches. So anybody on the East Coast can go to that. Yeah.
So when you've done all these paintings, and obviously you are a fan of Zenyatta and of A.P. Endy, who else has kind of, you know, is there a great story that you have before we let you go about one of the painters or painting something?
Well, they're all fabulous. I mean, they're just all also willing to help, and I love every one of them. But my all-time favorite was Silver Charm. He's just the original Silver Charm, not the little pony. But he is the Southern gentleman. And then the most recent one was Midnight Lute, because he is the Cary Grant Clark Gable of the equine world. He is so handsome and so debonair that I just adored him. And then Zenyatta will always be one of my favorites, too, that's for sure. So we're looking forward to get Rachel, too. I think she's back in Kentucky, so hopefully we'll be able to get a painting by her pretty soon to go with Curlin, yeah.
I was going to say, you know, she's basically getting married to Curlin this spring, and they will be expecting their first child in about 12 months, you know, after their wedding. So they will be, you'll have to definitely, maybe your first full painting will be the baby of Curlin and Rachel Alexandra.
I have done a baby already. I did, it was a mare up in New York. Her name was Cinnamon Bell, and we did her foal. And then here in Kentucky, we did Indian Blessings foal, or not Indian Blessing, Fleet Indian's foal was by Distorted Humor. And he did a painting with his mommy. They're together on the same painting. So I have done some foals, and that's a challenge because they don't want to be away from mommy. And but it'll be up for sale in May on our web store. We'll have that painting with some Fleet Indian and her foal. So there's always a new adventure around the corner with these Monets.
Well, first, thank you so much for what you do, you know, helping the horses that have come off the track and are not as famous, you know, and using this kind of avenue to raise money to help out these horses is fantastic. And thank you so much for what you do. And, what's coming up? What's next? I mean, do you have some big plans for anything else, or is it just more of the same awesome designs by the horses?
Well, with the Monets, after this auction, our next auction will be for Father's Day. Well, we have the Mother's Day on our web store. That will be a set price donation, and it will be all females. It will be all mummies, and there will be some famous females in that. And then after that, we're going to have a Father's Day special eBay auction with sires and sons, like Dynaformer and his son Purim, Smart Strike and his sons Curlin and English Channel. And things like that. We'll have all the famous fathers and their sons. So that will be in honor of Father's Day.
Cool.
So we just keep coming up with new ideas. So.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much for being a part of the show, Mary, and for what you do and for being a part of, you know, Rerun is a great adoption site and a great organization and you know, putting all this together, and I know it's your baby and your brainchild, and we just really appreciate everything that you do. We're glad there's people out there like you.
Well, I just encourage everyone to go and find an equine charity and donate to it, because it's so difficult. There are so many horses out there. The Unwanted Horse Coalition is doing their best to try and help everyone. So, you know, find your favorite charity and please donate to them.
Absolutely. And rerun.org. And I think I'm going to definitely have to go on and find at least, you know, maybe if I can't afford the $3,000 Zenyatta painting, I think I'll definitely have to go on and get the poster.
Absolutely.
And then try to explain
absolutely.
And then try to explain to my husband why we have this picture up in the house that says
art.
It was drawn by Zenyatta. Well, exactly. It's modern art, honey.
That's right.
And plus it's memorabilia. It's autographed by John Sheriffs, Mike Smith, and Steve Willard. So you have a little memorabilia there, too. Yeah.
There you go. Well, fantastic.
You
thank you so much, Mary. We appreciate it. And
appreciate
have a great week.
You too.
I love what she does. I just think it's so cool. If nobody has seen these, you've got to find, you know, some of the art. Just to see the fact that these horses, and they've got photographs of every horse painting each thing, to see the pictures of these horses, some horses actually take a paintbrush in their mouth and paint on this canvas.
Isn't that crazy?
It's just crazy. I think it's so cool. What a fun job to go out and try to get these paintings to, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's awesome. So did you ever get the note cards for Christmas?
I didn't get note cards, but I didn't have to wait till they came for Christmas. I didn't get Zenyattas yet. I did pick up a pack of the mixed ones where you get, I think, four different horses in the pack.
Uh-huh.
And I like that because there's a real variety of colors because, like Zenyatta, pink and teal and bright and shiny, great for a Christmas, birthday card, but maybe not so good for I'm sorry your pet died card. I use them for everything. So I got the mixed up pack because the different colors really create different kind of a mood for what you're going to put inside, and I really like having them. I think I'm down to about three cards now, though, so I need to restock.
Oh, boy. Better get some more.
Yeah, get some more. They're quick, though. You order them, they get them right out to you. It would be interesting someday if they didn't start getting them into some tax stores. I don't know if they ever do that. I've always just ordered them.
That would be a great idea.
Yeah. I think the last pack I picked up, now that I think about it, I was at the races, and they had lots and lots of little booths for all sorts of different thoroughbred organizations there, and they were there with their booth, and I picked them up at the horse show, and right behind me was Mike Smith talking to somebody important. It was really kind of cool.
Eek! Did you freak out?
a little bit. That's as close as I've ever gotten. It's like, oh! Important.
Hey, we want to thank everybody that posted on our Facebook page. Apparently, we struck a nerve with some people, and that's what we did not want to do, Alyssa, is to talk about all the Tennessee Walking Horse stuff, you know, and get people involved in that. And, you know, we just like to highlight the good here on Horses in the Morning, and we do appreciate everybody for calling in and for writing in and talking about the good stuff that goes on in the horse world and the Tennessee Walking Horse world. I mean, thanks so much to Alyssa Dauberman, the owner of Craving Blue, for joining us. She came in and called, and, you know, she she's a good person when the Humane Society actually writes good things about her. You know, they spend so much time highlighting the bad, and, you
that's
know,
right.
they highlighted the good, and
that's right.
good for her. And, you know, it's been a day of charitable people because we had Mary call in, and she's doing all this work for Rerun. And so there are good people out there. There is good stuff that happens. And, you know, just keep that in mind as you go through your week, that there are good things and there are good people, and life can be okay sometimes.
You probably got told this as a kid. You catch more flies with honey than vinegar.
Yeah.
So I look at it this way. It's frequently does more good to highlight the positive than to dwell and be angry about the negative part. We know it's there. We're not denying it. We're just not celebrating it. And I think by talking about it, you're not changing anybody's mind. You're literally celebrating the bad part, not doing it.
Yeah.
I think you're right.
So everybody, please, you know, if we learn nothing else today besides, you know, all that Jennifer just said, wear your helmet. We are going to talk more about this helmet
Where's
convention coming
helmet?
Up all week long. Glenn is currently on his way to the airport to get in an airplane to fly back to snowy Lexington, Kentucky.
Yeah.
But we'll have some more audio from the speeches and thanks to David O'Connor for joining us on the show this morning, whether he knew it or not. Glenn was recording his speech.
I think Glenn's going to have a lot to say about the symposium. He could not stop when I was talking to him last night. Apparently, this was just gangbusters interesting stuff. So I think next year I'm going to have to go along.
Oh, definitely. And at least just to get out of the snow, for crying out loud.
Well, yeah,
but,
if I go along,
you
know what's going to happen. They're going to have freezing in Florida, and it'll be sunny here.
I know. That's negative thinking right there.
You're right.
That's not positive.
Rewind. But, okay. I think that would be a good idea. I think I should do that.
I do, too. Yeah, cut, edit, rewind, redo. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I do think that there are two kinds of people in this world, Jen, and there's positrons and there's negatrons, and I like to be a positron.
There we go.
I am going to... You're a positron today, and we do appreciate it. And I hope Glenn has a safe flight back to Lexington, and you guys are reunited after an entirely long weekend apart.
Really
I'm sure it was horrible. Hey,
yep.
Did you wash all of your horse blankets
and
paddle pads and everything?
Yeah, I put gnarly, nasty laundry in the washing machine. I did wear my buddy boots. I didn't wear them into the car, but I did into the house. But I did wear them in his car.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and the washing machine smells like horses right now, so I need to remedy that before he gets back. Yeah.
No, leave it. He knows. I guess it was a little snowy. But you guys will have to come on out here for the winter, and I'll join you guys in the summer. Well, be sure to listen to all the shows on the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com. A really great eventing show this past week. And also, you can follow us on Facebook. Just search for Horses in the Morning. We're also on Twitter at Horse Radio. If you missed the live show, you can listen to the recorded version on our website, affiliate websites, iTunes. You don't have to miss an episode. Jen, what are we looking at for tomorrow?
Oh, tomorrow we've got our sport of the month. We're going to talk about mounted orienteering.
Okay, that's
a combination of trail riding and getting lost. You put those two together, and we're going to be talking to some folks about that. And Fran Yerga's going to stop by with some of her great almanac history facts. So we should have a good time there and see if we can't stump the hosts again.
Yeah, thank you very much for adding that in. Well, take care, everybody. Please wear your helmets. So I would say at this point, say goodbye, Glenn, but he's not here. So
goodbye, Glenn.
Say goodbye, Jen.
Goodbye.